Okay, welcome everyone. Thank you for our quarterly meeting for the paraprofessional money purchase plan. We will go to the minutes. We actually have 2 minutes to approve. We have our June quarterly meeting, and also we had that special meeting in June as well, where we discussed terminating a census and bringing on a new bookkeeping company. So, if someone wants to make a motion for items 2A and B, please.
So moved.
I will second.
Okay, so Hyklis made the motion to approve 2A and 2B, and Mike seconded that. And does all in favor? I think Lisa's on the call as well. Lisa?
I'm here, Leanne.
Okay, perfect. All right, so that item will pass. Let's go to the administrative matters. Item 3A, vote on switching to a pre-approved plan document with the new record keeper, NWPS, instead of our current. Items 3A and 3B, I have Pamela here, our attorney, to speak about. And I also have Richard Barrett from NWPS to speak about as well. Pam, are you able to take over the discussion on that one?
Sure. Yes. So right now, and forgive me, you probably all know this, but just to make sure that everybody's on the same page, right now the pension plan is on an individually designed plan. And it has a determination letter from the IRS from 2018. So the question is, do we want or do you want to move to a pre-approved plan? And the advantages of a pre-approved plan are, one, they're usually less expensive to maintain. And two, and this is probably a little bit more important, is that you get to rely on the IRS opinion letter of the pre-approved plan. Because the IRS, I don't remember when now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, changed the process. And they used to give determination letters to individually designed plans, but now they don't. And that is why we are seeing and recommending to people or to employers to move to a pre-approved plan so you can rely on the IRS opinion letter of the plan. So I looked at the NWPS plan document that they provide and or that they provide as an option. And it looks to me like it would be an appropriate plan document for the paraprofessional money purchase pension plan. There were a few questions. I went back and forth with them. And I'm assuming that it will work out because they're telling me that there's the 59 and a half in-service distribution that you're considering adding. It's not actually in the plan document yet, but that was a recent law change that permits distributions that early at age 59 and a half. And so my understanding is that is an option under this new plan. So So I guess my recommendation is to switch to the pre-approved plan and then for purposes of relying on the IRS opinion letter of it. But I don't know if you have questions or if you want me to talk about anything else.
I have no idea, Pam. I'm sorry to say that I have no idea what a pre-approved plan look like as opposed to an individual design plan. So if you could explain that to us.
Sure. So an individually designed plan means that it is a plan drafted specifically for your pension plan. A pre-approved plan is a plan drafted by companies, usually like Fidelity's or not NWPS, but companies that offer plan documents. And these companies go to the IRS and ask for approval of the terms of the plan. And the plan is generally approved, but it's drafted so that there are various provisions that each employer who adopts the plan can make the choices. Like, well, obviously you'd have a different plan name, but then you can have a different effective date and you can have different in-service withdrawals or different distribution types. These are all sort of options under the pre-approved plan document. But either way, the IRS has approved the form of the plan document, of the pre-approved plan document.
Would that give annuities or anything like that?
Oh yeah, you can include annuities or you cannot. The distribution options are based on the terms of the plan as drafted and approved by the IRS, but then they usually give employers specific options. So for distribution options, City of New Haven can choose to offer just a lump sum, or it can offer an annuity or a lump sum or installments. It's whatever choices are permitted under the pre-approved plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I looked at to determine if there was anything unique about your plan that would not kind of work well with the NWPS plan that they're offering. And as far as I can tell right now, it looks like it's compatible. So it would just be a matter of going through and picking the options that are consistent with your current plan terms.
Richard, so then, question for you, are we able to make changes to that? Like, after it's initially, if we were to go with that option and initially set it up, would we be able to make changes later on if anything needed to be changed in the future?
Yes. So you can definitely make changes going forward. One of the things is that you will have to make sure that the plan document and the provider permits the changes you're requesting. So like the 59 and a half, it provides a lot of the plan document that I looked at, the pre-approved plan document that I looked at, provides many options for how the timing of when in-service distributions are permitted. And if you want to limit it to once, or if you want to limit it, don't limit it. So there's a lot of flexibility there.
Would you be able to send us would we be given a list of which options we need to choose to have in there?
Or? Well, so normally how this process works is we would give the company, the NWPS, your existing plan document, and they fill it out and then they give it back to us and we look at it and review it to make sure it's consistent with your current plan document. But I mean, if you meant that you wanted to actually see the plan, I'm happy to forward whatever.
Just the distribution choices that we would have to make, like, well, if we're going to be making changes, because right now we don't offer the deferred comp and the 59 and a half. So these different things that we need to choose for our plan, do we get a list of the options we need to make choices on? You know what I mean?
Yes, they give you a checklist and you go through the checklist. And
that's what I want. That's what I need.
Okay.
So do you have anything to send to us, Pam, so we could look at it, review it, and decide on it with both plans so we could make comparisons and make an educated decision?
I can send the checklist that they sent me. I hesitate because I can send you whatever you want, but it's not super easy to read. I'm not 100% sure how helpful it will be to you.
Mm-hmm.
I can point out certain areas that might be, and then you can look at those and see if that is. I'm sorry, was somebody raising their hand?
Derek, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. You can finish. I just had a question. I mean, Pamela, it sounds to me, again, this is a little bit outside the realm of what we do, but it sounds as though it's the only advantage to the prototype plan is that you don't have to do the IRS restatement every few years. Is that, in fact, the only benefit of having a prototype plan versus a customized? Or are there others?
Well, actually, so because the IRS changed the rules, you don't even have to restate individually designed plans anymore. You would have to restate a prototype plan document every 6 years. But the advantage is that the IRS has sort of blessed that plan document. And the last time the IRS reviewed the current plan document on the individually designed plan was in 2014. So it's really the fact that the IRS has approved that plan document that's the advantage.
And we also, because we want to make these changes, we also are going to have to get it redone if we make the changes, right?
Well, you could make the changes as amendments and you would not have to.
Current one, right? To our current one. You're talking about yes. To our current one.
Yes, yes. So, and if this is all sounding too much and confusing, there is no need to rush to do this. It's not like something you have to do now or even this year. Your plan now does not have a lot of amendments. So, or a lot of amendments, a lot of unique amendments. So there's not a huge risk now. It's just going forward is what the real benefit is. If there are more changes and by adding these H59.5 amendments, but we could keep going right now and then consider maybe going to a pre-approved plan next year or in a couple of years or whenever you've had time to kind of digest this and think about it. There's no rush. The only reason I think attorneys seem to be more comfortable with them now is because of the fact that the IRS does not give determination letters on individually designed plans as a general rule.
Even if we make amendments. So if we can just make amendments to our current plan to add the 59.5 distribution option.
Yes.
Okay. Hiklas, is that the only option you really are looking for? Is that 59.5 or do you want to make other changes to it?
I was wanting to know a little bit more about the annuity part of it too, just to see how that will work, if it will work in the best interest of members. You know, if it would work out, because we don't have a pension plan. So everyone wants to have something that they can collect monthly. It seems, you know, everyone thinks when they separate that they have a pension to collect every month. Mm-hmm. So that's high on the ask.
Okay.
So I was wondering how we could go about that. How could that work in the current plan? Or do we need to change to be able to do that if that's what members would prefer?
If I may just jump in on that, Hiklas, I think we talked about this either last quarterly meeting or two quarters ago. When a member separates from service and takes their lump sum, they could always get an annuity in there. I don't see how the Board of Ed or this union would purchase an annuity for each individual who wants to roll their money out of the plan. So I think, you know, when we were hired a handful of years back, one of the things in the RFP was, you know, are annuities available? And our response was exactly what I just said. If, let's say, Hiklas, you're ready to retire and you have your lump sum, you can always go and get an annuity from a various insurance company, of which, you know, one of the things that we agreed, we're happy to sit down with your members and go over those options for them. We say, okay, there's these three different annuities and these are the features and benefits of both. And obviously, you know, that would be no charge to the member. It's just one of the advantages to being part of this plan. And that way, I think everybody can kind of weigh the benefits. Because some people, I mean, I think Jessica could talk more about it than I. I mean, it seems like everybody that rolls their money out just goes right to either like an IRA at their bank or into their checking account. It doesn't seem like anybody wants any sort of consultation for, you know, retirement benefit. It's just more like, hey, this is my money. I'm separated. You know, how do I get my money out? But, you know, that's at least my interpretation of it. I don't know if Jessica or even Mike, if you have any insight on how things work, other plans in the city work. I mean, I think they're all pretty much individualized, are they not?
Yeah, the 403, the only other annuities that people have are the 403Bs and the 457, and it's voluntary. We don't match them except for, you know, a couple of minor plans. We don't match anything. That's voluntary. But the money that the parents take out, no, it just usually goes into either an IRA or, you know, they get the lump sum. Right. Half of it can go to them, because half of it has to go to them and get taxed. But the other half usually they sometimes put in an IRA. Nobody gets an annuity through us, but it's never been an option that I know of that anybody's ever done or requested.
I don't know how you guys would even go about that.
Yeah, I don't think an annuity option is done. There's one specific situation, but that's way out there as far as like standard practice or whatever the case would be. But in general, we don't do like individualized annuities at the city.
You would be taking on a whole bunch of liability there.
Would we be able to let them roll it over into a 403B account though?
I think the best option would be sort of what Derek said, is I think if someone's gonna leave HighCliff,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's an education on where they put their money, as far as if they're looking for some type of annuity that they get paid out monthly. Maybe it's an education that, you know, we come up with where here's what happens when you put in an annuity versus here's what happened if you just put it in a traditional bank account, right?
Right.
I think that may be one of the best options to look at, is just the education. But as far as individualized annuities, we don't really have those in any union that I know about at the city.
Right. And then to add on to that, HighCliff, if someone, again, I'll just use you for an example. If you're ready to retire and you say, okay, you go to Jessica's office and say, okay, I want to retire. You're going to have X number of dollars to pull out of the plan. You could just call us up, Wendy and I, and say, hey, I have X number of dollars. Can you show me a couple annuity options? We could run an illustration for you and say, okay, if you take an annuity stream, this is what your income would be for life or for some amount of 10 years or 20 year period certain. Versus like, okay, or you could go and roll it into an IRA at your bank or, you know, at another firm. And we could always illustrate that for you. So I think I agree with Mike, you know, from an education standpoint, that was kind of something we've talked about extensively when we would come to your meetings to talk to your members and say, hey, listen, you can roll them over to an IRA, you know. And so if those types of discussions need to go further, we're happy to do that. That, you know, that's what we do.
Well, the common question I get from majority of members, do we have a pension? And, you know, so a lot of people think the parapen is an annuity where they're going to get something because some people we have members who are been working 50 something years and think that when once retired, they will have a monthly amount to collect, and just didn't understand it for a long time. I mean, I know Derek, people come and explain, but I think a lot of people, they don't attend, and then they don't, even when they do attend, they don't get the full understanding, realizing that this is, you know, so I always have to tell people it's not a pension plan. It says parapen, but it's actually a money market plan, and you get the lump sum at the end, when you're leaving. That's mostly what I'm telling you. If you want, you could put it into an IRA, you could put it in your bank, but if you take it out, that, you know, maybe have a penalty, just like Jessica's been telling me. But I think a lot of people were under the impression, because some people, they compare things with the cafeteria workers, because they have 33, Local 33 or Unite Here as their union, and they have some annuity that they collect. So some people are friends with them and said, oh, collect.
No, they don't collect anything like that. No, there's some of them that have an option to join the city pension plan. They have an option if they want to do that and not pay into Social Security, but there's no other pension or anything that they have. Yeah.
It's an either or with cafeteria. And again, I would be careful, HighCliff, and this may be where the education goes. Cafeterias were because of a situation where it was privatized and then unprivatized. So it's not just the same comparison as hiring a paraprofessional, right, who's been here for 30 years, I think. But I think, you know, working with the Board of Education, you know, it may be just, you know, time for maybe a refresher. I mean, I can't speak for Tom Lim and that group, but I'd be certainly happy to work with them or whatever the case is. But I get where the members come from on being confused on what this actually is. Mm-hmm. It's really an investment plan. I mean, putting it simply terms, investment plan that you get your money out when you leave, basically.
And the withdrawal forms that I give out to people, they were written, I think, by a census long, long time ago.
Right.
So once the new company, we have a new company here and they have their new forms, hopefully they'll be more easily explained on, you know, the options will be explained on those. And if Derek, if you want me to give out, you know, give them your card, or if you want to write up something that I can give out to people when they come to me, I can give it, here's your options. Do you want to, you can contact Derek or, you know.
Right.
Yeah, Jess, I think that would be a good idea, just so when folks come, you know, just so they have that information.
And I think that would be a good, I think that's good for you as an employer too, that you give the, you know, the liability is kind of removed from you folks, you know, here, okay, here's a financial professional that you could, you all could talk to and discuss your options. And that way, you know what, it's off of your,
right,
as the employer, and the liability is off of you, where now you have a financial professional involved. And, you know, obviously we have no problem helping discuss what their options are, you know, and then obviously if they want to, you know, illustrations, we can do that. Or if you just say, hey, these are your tax obligations and so on and so forth. So we've always put that out there, but I think Jessica, I think you hit the nail on the head. Well, I'll try to get you some sort of like form.
Yeah.
Just, hey, like, these are your options, bullet points. And if you want to discuss further, you know, here's Derek and Wendy's number. And, you know, even probably Amber will probably be the first line of defense to just kind of figure things out.
But
especially now with NWPX, everything's going to be so much more efficient.
Yeah.
Where it's going to be, they're going to have their real market value of their account. They'll see, you know, where things are going. And I think that just all together, the flow of this stuff will be a lot more simple.
Great.
Even with NWPS, if there was either one of the forms that they're going to be filling it out there, or like on that online website or something, if there was a way to list their, you know, Derek's contact information there,
mm-hmm.
even cut out Jess even more.
Yeah.
All right, then. So that kind of gives a little bit of a discussion. I think the reason why we brought up A was because we're switching over to NWPS this month. So in case anyone was interested in their pre-approved plan, but it doesn't need to be an immediate thing. If you want to sit on it, or if you want it on the next agenda, we can do that. If you want it completely off and we don't need to talk about it again, that's fine. I kind of just want an idea at the end of this, what you were thinking, because if you're thinking not to go with the pre-approved plan, then I think for item 3B, we need to discuss, you know, with Pamela to do that amendment for our current plan document so that she can move forward working on that.
So, Leanna, it sounded like from Pamela that this isn't really a rushed decision that we have to make today. So I think why don't we give it until the next quarter's meeting for everyone to kind of just think about it. And if they have any questions, they'll reach out to you, to reach out to Pamela, or whatever the case is. To see, I mean, there are obviously benefits to going to the pre-approved plan. But I think let's just give everyone until the next meeting, because there's no rush, Pam, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, so we will move on to item 3C. Again, this is from the last couple of meetings talking about the investment fees coming out of the paraprofessional statement. Mike, did you have any further information on this? I know you were speaking to the Board of Ed on it.
So, yeah. So, you know, Leanna and I were in contact with Derek, and, you know, we did get how much, you know, was coming out of each statement, so on and so forth. I think the next step for this really is a conversation with the Board of Education. As you know, the plan document is really, from an employer's side, managed by the Chief Operating Officer's office. So again, I think a conversation needs to be had regarding these fees with the CFO, Linda Hannons, myself, Thomas Lamb, at the Board of Ed regarding these fees. I did contact them as early as yesterday to try to set up a meeting to discuss it. So I'm just really waiting on their end to discuss this matter. But we have not lost sight of this.
So as far as you have gathered, Michael, does it sound like these fees will be refunded to the members?
Well, I need to talk to Linda Hannons again. The amount that was given to myself and Leanna as far as the overall amount on a yearly basis is a pretty significant amount that's charged. Again, there's a lot of mechanics. You know, me being city controller, I can't really make that decision since the Board of Education handles the pension, the paraprofessional plan. So again, you know, this would, I'm sure Linda Hannons as the CFO of the Board of Ed is going to have some questions. So I think that's where the discussion really comes in on this. But we definitely have not lost sight of this issue. So I will try them back if I don't hear back by tomorrow or Friday. I'll try them again next week to just at least get a meeting on to discuss this.
I just want to emphasize the urgency in doing this because, you know, seeing that you even mentioned it's a significant amount of money, it will take a little of this and that to get it settled with members because there are some members who have retired and, you know, lost theirs and members who, you know, are potentially going to retire soon and need to have theirs. So I think there's need to be handled with a little bit of urgency because this is the third meeting I think we're having and talking about the subject.
How many participants are there? Are there about 600 participants?
Is that something? No, around 400.
Active right now, 400.
But then, so there.
Okay. So, I mean, again, we can have a conversation offline, Highcliff, but I think, you know, there's a lot of variables that go into this and the fact that, you know, this was just brought, you know, I haven't been part of this, so I don't know when this was brought to anyone's attention on these advisory fees. But again, you know, we'll take a look at as far as how many plan members there are, what the estimated yearly is for, you know, the last few years and go from there. But again, this is really a conversation, I think. And I know Tom Lamb couldn't be on this meeting today, but this is really a conversation with the Board of Education on there.
Yes, I would like to have that conversation because it's a sticky point for members.
Okay. Well, like I said, we're on it. You know, we haven't lost sight, so.
Okay. Let's move on to item one, actually, for the investment report with Damon James.
Okay. So, Leanna or Taylor, you guys have the presentations?
Yes, give me one second. Which one were you looking to open first?
The performance report. I guess we'd start there and then talk about the markets and then open up to for questions. We'll start by saying, obviously, you know, if you've turned on a TV or looked at a newspaper anywhere throughout the United States for the past 6 or 8 months, you know that the financial markets have been in dire straits across every asset class from, you know, stocks to even bonds. And we can talk about, you know, kind of where the markets are and what things are going on. But, you know, this fund has been managed very, very conservatively, even though the conservative nature of the fund, you know, when then the sleep well portion of the portfolio, meaning the bonds, when bonds are down double digits and stocks are down high double digits, it's virtually impossible to have anywhere to hide. So if you could go to a couple slides down, I don't know who's driving. Leanna, are you driving or Taylor?
Yeah, it's me, Leanna.
Okay. Lee, if you could just go to page 3, I believe. Yeah, right here. So this just shows the total fund. You can see it's a little over $7.5 million in that top left-hand corner. And as you can see, there's only 31% of the fund is invested in stocks. So that's the conservative approach that this committee has enacted from day one when we started working together. And I want to just also mention when we were first hired, this fund was about $3 million. So this fund has grown from $3 million to $7.5 million. It did top out over $8 million. So obviously you see some losses in the capital markets, and I'll talk a little bit about that and where things are going from there. But you can see, even though this fund is only invested 30% of the fund in stocks, there's still, like I said earlier, stocks are down, bonds are down, alternatives are down. Really, there was nowhere to hide during this financial markets. And we'll talk about a little bit, not necessarily where we've been, but also where we think things are going, so we can make some educated decisions together. So the upper right-hand chart just shows the growth. So the blue is the contributions and the green is the growth. So you can still see that we're positive. Even through this financial turmoil, the fund is still a positive return. You can see the portfolio annualized return on the bottom left there is about 5% annualized return. The way the fund was invested earlier before let's just talk about that. If nothing had been changed, this fund was invested in short-term treasuries, which are down anywhere from 9 to 10%. So there would be a dismal rate of return on fixed income. So all things being equal, the fund is still, in our opinion, performing as well as it can. You know, we're not magicians, unfortunately. I wish we could make everything go up, but when everything goes down, there's really nowhere to hide. So next page, please. So this just shows kind of where the top 10 holdings are, what sectors you're in, types of bonds. See that there's a bunch of cash, obviously, that we keep the fund buoyed by cash, as an alternative to stocks and bonds. We have a large cash position, which helps stave off some of the negative returns. I won't spend a lot of time here unless there's questions. With that said, next page, please. So this just shows the actual fund itself. As you can see, the total portfolio since inception is an annualized rate of return of 5% per year, compounded rate of return. You can see the last 12 months and year to date, the fund's down anywhere from 10 to 12%. And again, what does that mean? Well, the S&P 500 is down, 15 to 18%. Bonds are down 8 to 12%. Some bonds are even down 18%. So there really is nowhere to hide, even with a conservative portfolio, and to stave off negative returns. The good news about this plan is that the once a year snapshot is only reflected once a year. So this coming fiscal year, you'll have the opportunity to make money again. So we made money in every year with the exception of this past year. So every year this fund has made money. This particular year, the fund is off. Next page, please. So this just breaks it down on a more granular level. I don't need to spend a lot of time here unless there's questions. But again, the key here is that there's still positive flows, positive growth. The fund is still up 5% per year, which is far better than what it was. You know, hopefully we'll get a tailwind to the equity markets, which I'll talk about momentarily, which will help get some positive returns again. Next page, we could scroll through, I think, a couple pages. There's only one more chart I want to talk about here, and then we'll talk about the markets. No, one more down. One more, please. I think there's one. Yeah, so this just shows, again, a bigger breakdown. So within the equity portion of the portfolio, you can see, the overall allocation of equities. I want to concentrate on equities, and then I want to talk about fixed income, and we'll talk about where that's going. So actually, let's talk about fixed income first. You see short-term fixed income. That is typically the safest place to be. So you have just under 900,000. So about 12% of the fund is in cash, which is not making money, but it's not losing money. So that's a good ballast to the ship or ballast to the portfolio to stave off negative returns. The next thing is the investment grade short maturity fixed income. You can see 36% of fixed income is short maturity. Typically, that's the safest place to be in the fixed income market. But now you have a Fed. So the Federal Reserve, what we hear, Fed is raising rates. That's where they're raising rates. They're raising rates on the short-term interest rates. So short-term rates went from, 1.25% at the beginning of the year, went up to 3.5%. Then it went down to 2.6. Now it's back up to 3.4. So the movement of the rates is what's depleting the fixed income portfolio of this portfolio. And then, on the stock portion, you can see very small allocations to the safest, which are large cap value, large cap growth stocks. There's only 6% of the portfolio, 6 or 7% of the portfolio in large cap stocks. And then it goes down to 2 or 3% in the small cap or non-US equity. So there really isn't a lot of tremendous amount of equity risk here. So when we establish this asset allocation collaboratively, it's like, okay, we want to have some growth component of the portfolio. We need to have some stock in there, but we want to be safe. And again, I've always referred to the equity markets as your eat well. Okay, we're going to make returns, positive returns, typically over the long term. The eat well portion of the portfolio are your stocks. But the sleep well portion, which are the bonds, that's the stuff that, is a safe investment. Even your sleep well portion of the portfolio is getting beaten up because of what's going on with the Federal Reserve and rates and inflation. And I could talk about why that's happening or where it's going. I'm going to talk about that momentarily. But I just wanted to show you visually that even though this fund is very conservatively invested, there really is nowhere safe to be in the markets as we speak. And we think it's going to continue to just kind of, there's going to be more volatility up and down in the markets. But ultimately, we think we're close to a bottom, if not already put a bottom in the equity markets. So I'll talk about that momentarily. Unless there's any questions here, I'd like to talk about the capital markets, because I think what's most important is, okay, where do we go from here? Is there any changes that need to be made or any suggestions? And if there's not any questions here, I'd like to move over to the market commentary. So this is just kind of a summary of what's going on. It says weekly market guide, and our firm puts this out every single week, an update of what's going on in the capital markets, both on the stock market, the bond market, what's going on in the economy with unemployment rates, what's going on with the Federal Reserve. But, what I was just talking about on that top right, you can see, year to date price return of these stocks and the rolling 12 months, you can see there was literally nowhere to hide. The Dow Jones is one of the bigger large cap indices, down 13% year to date. The S&P 500 down 16.5%. NASDAQ, which is technology stocks, typically they're down 25%. And then you see non-US stocks. Okay, if we're diversified, we're not only investing in US stocks, but non-US stocks. You can see they're down anywhere from 20 to 24% as well. So on the equity markets, there really is nowhere to hide. And you can see it right below that. Those are the different sectors. So if you have a diversified portfolio of stocks, you can see which the S&P 500 is pretty evenly balanced. That's down 16.5%. The only place to hide was energy and utilities. And you know what? We do have some energy in the portfolio. It's just, at what point is it, not enough? So a lot what's going on here, we'll just talk fundamentally what's happening. So we know that there's record levels of inflation. We have inflation in the markets and one thing we've noticed is with the Federal Reserve, when we went through COVID, we went through the financial crisis of 08 and 09, the Federal Reserve injected large quantities of liquidity into the market. They brought rates down to zero, and they put this quantitative easing program in where they just injected liquidity into the capital markets. Well, what does that do over time? That creates a level of inflation. So what's happened in the markets now is inflationary pressures on all pretty much all assets, all real assets, from oil to food, obviously, the gas in our tanks. And so what the Federal Reserve, that's an overheating economy. So what the Federal Reserve does, they really only have a couple levers to pull. They have rates and monetary policy. So what they do is they create a demand destruction. They're not going to be able to increase the supply chain, right? They can't. The Federal Reserve doesn't manufacture anything. But what they do is let's disrupt the demand. So what we'll do is we'll choke off the economy, raise rates, and take the liquidity out of the market. So what that will do is push the economy, slow the economy down, and push us, if not into recession, close to a recession. And then what that does, obviously, the stock market feels that and the bond market feels that because you're raising rates. So bonds have an inverse relationship. When rates go up, bond values go down. That's why you see the negative returns in the bond market. And you also see stocks reacting to a economy that's slowing and being pushed into a quasi-recession. So you really have two market forces in play here. You have the bonds being affected by the interest rates, and you have the stocks being affected by the fiscal policies. So it's really a very tough situation to be in from a financial standpoint. So what do we do? If you go to the next page, please. This looks at macro US. So this is, okay, the jobs. So we still have an unemployment rate that's shrinking. So unemployment rate is still going down. So it's 3.7 versus 3.5. So we're still in an okay position from a labor standpoint. So that's one thing that we look at and say, okay, labor is okay. Manufacturing is still okay. So we'll go to the next page. This says, okay, what are the upcoming catalysts for the markets? What's going to drive, you know, any possible tailwind for these stock markets? And you say, okay, well, the Fed has raised rates several times, 75 basis, which is 0.75%. That's an astronomical jump. Typically, the Fed moves in 25 basis points or 0.25% intervals. They've been raising rates at 0.75%. And we anticipate that happening again in the next rate hike. So that said, what is that doing? Those rate hikes are artificially slowing the economy. You can see the 30-year mortgage rate is now at 6%. That's going to slow the housing market. You know, the cost of auto loans is gone up. Really slowing the economy artificially is what the Fed is trying to do. It's intentional. It doesn't feel good, but the Fed is trying to push the demand destruction away from these asset prices. If you go to the next page, someone say something. I didn't. Okay. So you say, okay, well, what drives stock prices? It's fundamentals. It's okay. Stocks have earnings estimates. You know, what's going to happen with these stocks when earnings come out? And you can see all these estimates have been revised lower. So the Wall Street thinks, okay, companies we thought were going to earn, you know, X number of, you know, dollars or cents per quarter, we're going to revise those down. And this happens every time we go through a constricting market. You know, when things are good, earnings estimates are very, very high. And you can see the chart in the upper right. You can see where earnings estimates were over, you know, first quarter, second quarter. You can see everything's being revised downward for third quarter and fourth quarter. And so earnings estimates get revised down until you start to see some positive earnings estimates coming out. So they revise the estimates, companies come out, report earnings, typically miss. That drives stocks lower. And then ultimately, they revise their earnings low enough where, okay, we start to see some companies beating earnings estimates. And that will then ultimately reverse course on the equity markets. Next page, please. So we look at things from an earnings, you know, fundamentals, we call it bottoms up stocks. Like, okay, are companies earning money? What do you have to pay for every dollar of earnings that companies make? When you also look at from a technical standpoint, you look at the stock charts and say, okay, where is their support levels? Where are their resistance levels? So that top chart on the left side, you can see that 3,900 support for the S&P 500. That's a very important level at 3,900. And that's right around where we are. So we're bouncing right around 3,900 as we speak. If that holds, we think the June lows we're in, and we don't think we're going to retest. But if we do consecutively go close below that 3,900, we might see stocks go a little lower. The good news for this portfolio, if stocks do go lower, that then becomes an opportunity for this plan to rebalance and say, okay, we're going to buy the stocks that we have. I'm not suggesting to increase your equity allocation within the 30%, 35% range. We can then just rebalance and buy more stocks because you have a lot of cash, short-term fixed income. You can buy stocks lower because we all know this is a long-term retirement plan for most, and this thing needs to be managed very prudently. So buying stocks at a lesser price is always a good opportunity when things come down. So we've been doing that right along. Next page. So one of the things that is a headwind typically for stocks is the US dollar. So our dollar is very strong. Let's think about this from a, so when we say the dollar strong, what makes a dollar strong is when there's a demand for dollars. So if you're a European corporation, or you're an Indian corporation, or a Japanese corporation, you say, okay, we have our company's money sitting in their version of treasuries, you know, their fixed income portfolio. Well, their fixed income portfolios are not earning what ours are now because our Fed has raised rates. So they say, okay, well, rather than buying Japanese yen or the euro, let's go buy US dollars. So when these companies of international companies and even international governments start buying dollars, that drives the value of the dollar up. So that pushes the value of the dollar up versus we've just had a parity at the euro, dollar euro parity for the first time pretty much since the euro has been in existence. And that is because of where our rates have gone. So we think that will settle. And so let me take a pause there. So when the dollar's strong, that drives typically both stocks domestically down and international stocks down. Now here's the bright spot. We think as the Fed continues to raise rates, the dollar will start to cool off a little bit because now there's other centralized banks throughout the world that are starting to raise rates as well, not just the United States. So that will make the demand for the dollar go down a bit and the value of the dollar to weaken against other basket currencies. So that should, what was once a headwind for stocks, both domestically and internationally, will now become a little bit of a tailwind. Just a small bright spot that we potentially see on the intermediate term horizon. Next page, please. So where is there safe havens? It's typically within the stock market, dividend paying stocks. So those are the large cap value, small mid cap value stocks that we purchase in the portfolio. So of your stocks, we're split between growth and value. We have a little bit of a value bias, and we think those will help support the safe part of your stock portfolio. Next page. Like I mentioned earlier, 30-year mortgage rates are at, I think about a 15-year or 14-year high at 6%. So that is going to definitely hamper the housing market that's overheated. There's no doubt about it. The housing market throughout the country is overheated. And we need to see that cool. And it is already starting to cool a little bit as the mortgage rates go up. So just one of the things we're looking at. Next page. So the Dow Jones transports are something that we watch. It's actually a leading indicator for where the markets are going. You see they've pulled back a bit. So now we're looking at a potential floor in for the transports. If we start to see that turn around, we look at that as a buoy for the economy. So that's one of the indicators we look at within the stock market. Next page. I'm going to wrap up here, I believe. I think that was it. So basically, what are we watching? You know, what's driving the economy is the Fed. It's just that simple. The Federal Reserve, when the markets are worried, the Fed injects capital, liquidity, and cuts rates. So we think collectively, you know, Wendy and I were just talking about this earlier today, the Fed can't afford the debt service of, you know, the debt service. We have millions of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars of U.S. Treasury that the our government has to pay interest on. So as interest rates go up, the debt service on our U.S. dollar is going up. So it behooves the Fed to get rates up quickly and then cut rates. Go get the economy cooled off. Push rates up as high as they can, as fast as they can. That's why they're moving in 75 basis point increments to really stave off this inflation. Then they will go into a rate cutting environment where rates will start to be pushed down and that will stimulate the economy. They'll actually put quantitative easing probably back into the markets. And that will be an opportunity for stock market to drive up because we'll get to be a little tailwind for equity markets and that will help your portfolio. So for right now, we'll say let's keep things the way they are. You're very diversified, very conservative. If we see an opportunity, I don't think there's going to be an opportunity in the near term for stocks, but as we see an opportunity presenting itself, we'll certainly make you aware of it and say, okay, this is an opportunity to perhaps buy a little bit more stock and diversify the portfolio a little bit further. With that said, are there any questions? Can I answer any questions for anybody?
Sorry. Thank you.
Any questions?
Okay. I think you summed it up very well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Extensive report. Yes. All right. We have item 4. Does anyone have any new business that they want to bring up to discuss or potentially for the next meeting?
I just wanted to just comment that I did talk to a census and to find out what's going on with the final valuation, and she's still working on it. She sent a couple of questions to us the other day. Munis is down. I can't look into answering her what those questions are, but they're still working on the closing. So once they finish the valuation, when we talked to the new company, they said that I should probably send the paperwork for the people that I'm holding, that I've been holding since June, some of them. They said I should submit those to a census once the valuation is done. But a census is only supposed to be, you know, active for this. I think the other day was their last day. They have to finish the valuation, but I'm not able to send these applications to them, I don't think. I think I'm going to have to send them to the new company. That's just, I can't wait for the next meeting to do that. So I'm going to have to, once the valuation is done with a census, I'm going to have to get somebody at the new company and WPS to start handling these withdrawals.
They dropped off, huh?
They just haven't finished the valuation. And I mean,
no, I'm saying they were on the call, the guy he dropped off.
Yeah, I don't see them on.
But I have his, they're really good with email. So yeah. I will. When this is done, I can send an email to them and have you on it, Jess. And
yeah,
all the situation of what's going on, the valuation's not done, and like, technically their time has ended, so they'll finish the valuation. But as far as those that need to be paid,
right? Some of them have been waiting since June, and they're calling on a daily basis.
I mean, NWPS seems like they're going to be pretty efficient and quick.
Yeah.
Our hope was just that these people that you already had would not have to resubmit forms. And I think when we had a side discussion with them, NWPS, they were kind of hinting toward, well, like you said, census should handle those. But considering the census doesn't work through the summer and basically their contract is complete, I agree they probably will not want to process those. Nor do I think that they are required to if we're done with them after this.
Right.
How many are there, Jess?
Probably 10, 15.
Okay.
So was the census notified of the termination already?
Yes.
So we did that in July because they need a 60-day notice. So we did that after we voted in June. We sent them the termination letter in July for 60 days, which actually I think was effective this past Monday, but we put in the termination notice that we're going to require them to still continue and finish the valuation.
And mail the statements.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I'll send that email to NWPS at the end of this meeting.
Thank you.
Was there anybody else, anything else from anyone? Okay, so the next meeting will most likely be in about December. So I'll be sending information out on that, looking at dates in November. Does anyone want to make a motion to exit the lovely meeting we've had today?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Thanks, guys. Great to see you all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Good seeing you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.